Hi, my name's Chuck. I invite you to join me for the Emotion Roadmap every fourth Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m., a show where you will learn to take the wheel and control how you feel. You're listening to WPKN FM 89.5 on your dial in Bridgeport, Connecticut. This is Chuck Wolf, and you're listening to the Emotion Roadmap. Take that wheel and control how you feel. So we've had a chance to talk to Ruvan, but now I want to talk a little bit about the excitement that I'm anticipating tonight in watching the University of Connecticut play some basketball against the Arizona team. And I think it's going to be another great game. I don't know if you've been watching or getting caught up in March Madness, but I thought it'd be a really good time to have a chance to talk with someone who has actually participated in Division I athletics and who is a head basketball coach, and we'll be talking to John Gallagher in just a few minutes, I hope. So one of the things that I want to just ask you to think about is just simply this, that, you know, there are times when you watch a sport and you see a sport and you think about what makes someone successful in sports. And I don't know that it's all that different in life. In sports, sometimes they talk about something called being in the zone. And those of you who are sports addicts and people who really watch a lot of sports, and in this case, I think addict is a good thing, but maybe it's a problem. But in any case, when you think about being in the zone, it means that you can't do anything wrong. Sometimes, once in a while, the show feels that way to us. We just feel like, you know, we're really in sync. It's really working very smoothly. You know, sometimes it just has that great feel to it. I imagine that's true for what you do as well. When are you in the zone? And can you look at and notice and think about, maybe even write down, how are you feeling when you're in that zone? Sometimes you don't want to step back away from the zone because it feels so good to take a moment to do that. But the question becomes, knowing what it is that works in an ideal sense for you, that when you're in a zone, what feelings seem to be happening? What are you feeling inside? Can you write down what it might feel like? Because sometimes you're in a zone by yourself, doing something on your own. Sometimes it's a team, and the team feels like there's a harmony. I once read a book by Bill Russell. Bill Russell was that famous Boston Celtics player that won so many championships. I think it was like maybe 9 or 10 championships in the seasons that he played with the Celtics. I was a kid growing up when he was playing, and I remember listening at night to when they played the Lakers, and it was like way late at night, and it'd be on the radio, and I'd supposed to be sleeping, and I would just, the Celtics had an amazing capacity to keep winning year after year after year. And what made that happen? Bill Russell described the moment as white lightning. He said, sometimes you went down the court with your team, and there was like this white lightning in the room, and it seemed like all of you were in some kind of harmonious relationship. Everyone knew what everyone else was going to do. The ball just went exactly where it needed to go. The basket seemed unbelievably large. The defense was magnificent. And as we watched this, it was just, I don't know, he just coined the term white lightning, just filled the room. And it was almost like an aura took over, and they played a kind of basketball that just seemed heavenly, I guess is the expression. So what creates that? And as we watch, we are very lucky in Connecticut. We have the women's best player in the country, no question, Maya Moore. And most people, including me, believe that Kemba Walker is the best men's player in the game today playing college basketball. And we have had a chance over the year to watch these people play, and it has been spectacular. I teach at the University of Hartford in a class every so often called Emotional Intelligence in Organizations. And one of the people that have been in my class is a fellow named Brian Glowiak, who's the director of operations for the University of Hartford's men's basketball team. Now, in the past, I've been, had the chance to go and watch the men's basketball team and the women's basketball team. Some of you may know the coach of the women's basketball team. She's very well known in our state, Jen Rosati. Jen was part of that first 1995 championship and was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, making a crossover dribble against Tennessee, the dominant name in women's basketball at the time. And that was the part of the beginning of the the era of women's basketball becoming just an incredibly dominant force in the game. And Jen is now the University of Hartford women's basketball coach, and her team managed to get all the way up to the American East Conference. And in case you happen to miss it, they actually played the University of Connecticut women's team in an opening round game. They didn't do as well as they'd like against the University of Connecticut, but that's true about, I think, several hundred teams in the last few years that haven't done as well as they'd like against the University of Connecticut. Just an amazing story. Well, in any case, as you think about being in the zone, as you think about what it takes for a team to win, as you think about championships, I'd like you to just think about this.
I've paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence but committed no crime. And bad mistakes I've made a few. I've had my shells and kicked in my face, but I've come through.
And I need to go on, 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 on.
We are the champions, my friends, and we'll keep on fighting till the end. We are the champions. We are the champions. No time for losers, 'cause we are the champions of the world. I've taken my bows and my curtain calls. You brought me fame and fortune and everything that goes with it. I thank you all. But it's been no bed of roses, no pleasure cruise. I consider it a challenge before the whole human race.
Welcome to John Gallagher. I would like to talk a little bit about John's background before we get him on the phone. He's been someone who has done a lot of work recently in the coaching field and has participated in a number of different universities. And we are going to actually, excuse me one second. We got Brian on the line. Brian, you there? Hello, Brian. Okay, well, I actually had hoped that Brian Glowiak is a director of basketball operations in the University of Hartford, and I'm, you know, kind of trying to synchronize this. So Brian gets to introduce you, John, and I'm really pleased that Brian's on the phone, because Brian's told us some great stories about your basketball team this year. And I thought, rather than me just read a few lines here, I do know a little bit of history and then some really neat things from Brian. But I thought it'd be really neat if, Brian, you got a chance to tell us a little bit about Coach Gallagher.
In 2008, I was a senior, and that was Coach Gal's second year at Hartford. I had the great experience of playing for him for 2 years. He ended up coming in between you know, my 4 years at Hartford. And it was really, you know, a blessing in disguise because he really, you know, turned things around and kind of rejuvenated my basketball careers, you know, as well as a couple of the other guys in the program at the time. I could just go back and, you know, give a little history on Coach Gal just so everyone can know where he's coming from. He went to school at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia and played for 3 years under Coach Phil Martelli. He was a member of the 1996 team that advanced to the Sweet 16. Upon his graduation, St. Joe's, he spent 5 seasons as an assistant coach at LaSalle University.
Brian, just one second. We're going to try and change the station because it's coming a little fuzzy. Let's see if we figure this out. All right, try it now.
Okay, if I could pick up where I left off.
Yeah,
he spent 5 seasons at LaSalle University as an assistant coach after he graduated from St. Joe's. 2 seasons under legendary head coach Steve Morris and 3 seasons under Billy Hahn. After LaSalle, he went on to be the top assistant coach at Lafayette College under Fran O'Hanlon. And from there, he went on to Hartford to be the associate head coach under Dan Leibowitz for 2 years. Those are the 2 years that I got to play for Coach Gal. And after 08, he went to the University of Pennsylvania to be the associate head coach under Glenn Miller. After those 2 years, he took the top assistant job at Boston College under Steve Donahue, who came from Cornell, and that lasted a little over a week because he was then offered the head coaching job at Hartford, was offered an opportunity to come back, and, you know, took it. And in my opinion, I think a big part in the reason why he did come back is because he made so many great relationships while he was there from 2006 to 2008. And, you know, the class that he had, the senior class that he had, was the freshman class in 2008 that he had recruited. And, you know, he was very close with those seniors, you know, felt that they were a big reason why that he came back and, you know, really wanted to be a positive influence on them and really give them, you know, a good last senior year. And, you know, in my opinion, Coach Gallagher definitely best known for his high energy, his positive approach, and he's very good at, you know, motivating his players through the use of emotion.
Brian, before we ask Coach Gallagher to respond, could you just tell the story you told when you were in my class and the other night about the difference between the loss at BU, and you don't have to go into so much detail in the year before, but what, you know, the difference in the playing almost the same team of players and how different it was this year. And I know that there was a loss at the end of the season in the conference that you played in, but the description you gave of what happened afterwards and the way the team responded was just like amazing.
Yeah. You know, this is my first year as a director of operations at Hartford. You know, so I wasn't with the program last year, but I was close with a lot of the players still. And you know, it's just amazing how, only a year ago, you know, the same exact team basically goes from losing to Boston University by 41 points. And the very next year, you know, same team, same guys, just, you know, a new coach, new approach. You know, we were right there to the end and actually, you know, had a position to win it. And, you know, being in the locker room after that game, I mean, you know, the season was over for five of those guys, five seniors, and it was very emotional. And, you know, I can say that, you know, the experience that they had, you know, coming from you know, such a tough, you know, 40-point blowout the year before to, you know, having a chance to go to the championship game the very next year, you know, I think it was very significant for those guys, and it just showed that, hey, they had a tough junior year, but they didn't give up. They stayed with it. And, you know, they had a chance to make a run to the championship. So that showed a lot of character on those guys' part.
Well, thank you. Coach Gallagher, you're with us still?
I am. And, Brian, you just got a raise.
Well, you know, he's a big fan of yours. I can tell you, he's talked a lot about all the things that you've done. I know you had started the season. It was a tough way to start the season. But, you know, the kind of headlines for me in terms of talking to you today, Coach, is that, you know, we're in the middle of March Madness. We got a lot of emotions in play for a lot of teams. I know that your team, when you first took it over, you struggled a lot in the beginning. You had a great run in the middle. And so I'm looking, you know, because the name of the show is Emotion Roadmap. Take the wheel and control how you feel. And I really firmly believe in trying to convince Brian and the other people in this class that you can have so much more control of your emotions than you possibly can believe, and over others' emotions, which I think you do all the time in coaching if you're successful. And it seems like you really created some success with what you're doing.
Well, the first thing is, you know, when you're a coach, or if you're a business owner, or if you're a teacher, or whatever you are, and you're in a position of leadership, you have to realize that in 10 years, in 5 years, no one's really going to know how Hartford basketball finished this year, or no one's going to know how your classroom, how they achieved in the classroom, but they're going to remember the relationships and what they decide to give to the relationship. So we had a lot of guys crying after the game. Well, that was a sign to me that everybody was all in. And when you're dealing with emotions, as a coach, the first thing you have to do is, when you walk into a room, is what are the perceived emotions? How can you detect the body language in the room? Okay, so, you know, I've taken a class on, you know, emotions, and then when you get to perceive, how do you use it? Because we're very emotional in the business that we're in, but how do you use it to really be a problem solver? And that is something that, if you're not good at, I don't care how much you know about basketball, you're not going to be successful. And you are a problem solver when it comes to emotion. And then the other thing is, how do you understand it, and then how do you manage it? And there are some of the things that, as a coach, emotionally, you put so much into the group, but sometimes you have to fire by yelling, and other times you have to scream and yell, and other times you might have to be silent. But one thing you can't be is you can't treat every situation the same, because emotions aren't like they were. Players don't play with the constant emotion as they did in the 50s and 60s. And even people want to know why they are giving this much emotion.
It's interesting. You've kind of reflected back to me. I don't know if you know the Emotion Roadmap, but it's identify, use, understand, and manage. The only thing that would be a little different than what you've studied so far that I've added to it is something where I look at, you know, I see what I see. I feel what I feel. I know what's in the room with me if I'm accurate about this stuff. And then you said, how do you use that? And I think that's right, to use what you see and what you experience in terms of how the players are feeling. The other question, though, is what would be ideal for them to feel? And I've actually asked Brian to try and watch as he's sat through the season with you, to think about, you know, when somebody's in that idea of a zone, when the team seems to be in a total harmony, what's going on? What do you see as those feelings? And is there some way, when you know the feelings you're shooting for that are ideal feelings for playing the best of the capabilities of the players that you have, everybody playing at their highest levels and playing together at their highest level, what's going on, and how is that different than other times, and how do you capture that and recreate that as often as possible?
Well, first thing is, anytime anybody is feeling great about themselves, they usually are in what I call the rhythm of life. They are in a great rhythm. they are usually in stride to be the best version of themselves. So it's very similar. That feeling is the same as the team. So the team must get in a rhythm. And the only way you get into harmony is if everybody is dancing to the same beat, moving in the same direction. That being said, the only way you do that is by repetition. Because if you try to do, if you try to have a different plan each day, what happens is there is no rhythm. You know, you might have a couple good games, but there never becomes a rhythm. And then with the rhythm, you must make each guy realize that they must become the best version of themselves to have great rhythm. And there are some of the things as a coach, I try to get my group to understand that it's about the repetition, but it's about the energy that you're bringing to the rhythm of the practice, of the day. So then you feel better about yourself.
Yeah, as I'm listening to your talk, Coach, there's I'm thinking instead of the Queen playing We Are the Champions, if I have you on again, I'll play this rhythm by Johnny Cash. but I'm also thinking that, you know, you had a you're talking about repetition, but it's got to be hard when you start the season really in a tough way like you did to keep people's spirits up. Because you didn't have that rhythm early on. You had a bunch of guys that were hoping to create that, and it took you a while. And I'd like to talk about, you know, how did you stay positive through that period of time, and how did you get the kids to respond?
First thing is, you cannot judge your performance on the record that you have or the result that you have. And why I say that is we have a call, you know, we have a standard of performance, which is a list of expectations that we want to really, really strive for. The wins will take care of themselves if you worry about these expectations. So the foundation has been built. If you don't have a good foundation, you worry too much about the winning and the losing, and the emotion of the losing drags you so down that it may be unrecoverable. But if you realize that it's just about these expectations and making sure that you get to this level of expectation, you play through the losses much easier. And I'm not saying it's easy, because it's not, but the emotion that you derive doesn't start from winning or losing. It starts from these expectations.
So it's kind of like you set a standard and you meet that standard over time. And the standard isn't so much in a record as much as it is you're pushing everybody to be better every chance that they get after every performance until ultimately you're creating victory.
Correct. But you don't start by saying the goal is to be victorious. You start by saying the goal is to meet these expectations.
Interesting. And now you actually participated, I saw in one of the things that Brian had sent me about you, that you've been part of a Sweet 16. You managed to get to the Sweet 16 as a player.
Yeah.
You know, as you got there, you had to go through a couple of rounds to get there. Can you talk a little bit about your feelings as a player going through that and then what it felt like when you didn't get past the 16th?
Yeah, we beat University of Pacific in the first round, which had Michael Olowokandi. It was a number one pick. We won that game, and that game was in Salt Lake City, Utah. And that emotion was just like, all right, we're through the first round. We were a four seed. We had won the Atlantic 10 championship. So then the next round, we played a five seed in Boston College, who had won the Big East championship. We beat Boston College in the second round in an overtime game. And then we were in the Sweet 16, and we had to fly to San Jose. And then we went to San Jose and played Kentucky, who lost in the national championship game. And losing that game, it was hard, but the emotion that you put into the whole season, you knew that it wasn't a failure. You knew you had a, it was a successful campaign.
It's interesting. So you kind of talked about the feelings at the end, but what about when you beat those other teams? Well, I know maybe it's obvious, but I'm really a student of this stuff. So yeah, can you talk about, you know, some of the feelings? Because I got to believe that beating Boston College was like, wow. I mean, we beat Boston College.
Yeah, it was a huge, huge win for us, and the emotion was really. You know, those moments are hard to describe, Chuck, because it's so euphoric and it's so heaven-like that you don't know if it ever gets any better than those days. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I absolutely do. I absolutely do.
And that is, those days are truly priceless.
You know, it's kind of nice, I think, as a coach, although I don't think that every coach has to be a player. I don't believe that, you know, that has to happen.
Neither do I.
But I do think when you've had that experience and you've felt that euphoria and that you can share what that euphoria feels like, that sometimes emotions are contagious. And, you know, when you've been there and you've had a few experiences, either as a coach or as a player, but you've been there and you've felt it and you've been a part of something really special, that special feeling can be communicated and shared with others, and everybody gets caught in it, and that helps to create that rhythm you were talking about, I think.
It's so important to know what players go through, but I don't think you necessarily need it. But it is, you know, it's good that, like, I've been up at 6 o'clock in the morning weightlifting. I've had to run the mile. I've had to do all the physical conditioning. So, you know, there's a great awareness of what the players have been through.
Well, you know, it sounds great. What are your hopes and expectations for next year, John?
Well, we're going to have 7 new freshmen, and we're going to have a whole new group. And but my expectations are that we meet the standard of performance and we don't have a slip up in that area. We make sure that, you know, that we are adhering to those, you know, because what we think is, and our belief is, the standard of performance is like a tree right next to the championship, okay? And if you do those things, eventually you're going to get to the championship.
Sounds great. It'll be fun to come see you play next year. I'm looking forward to going.
I look forward to it, and I'd love to sit down with you sometime and just talk about some of your emotional ideas and different thoughts that you have. And you know, Brian's spoken very highly of you, and I really would like to sit down with you, and I'll even take a look at your book.
Well, I got a few chapters that I've written, but you know, maybe Brian's got a paper he's writing for me, right, Brian?
Yeah, that's right.
So, what I'd like to, as Brian puts his paper together, I'd love to sit down and go over his paper with you and talk to you about, you know, I have done some consulting with lots of teams. I've done a little bit with sports teams, but not much. But I do, you know, I think what works for me is this whole idea that we have an incredible ability to control our emotions and our emotional relationships with others that is untapped, that people just don't realize that they're capable of tapping. Now, I think anytime you've been a coach in the role that you've been in, John, and what Brian's seen and experienced as a player and as director of basketball operations, you can see the kind of influence you can have. And without looking backwards too much, but there's an amazing difference as the way Brian described the team a year ago and the team today, and a lot of the same people. The difference was somebody who's at the head of the charges, who's got some different ideas about what it takes to create a team spirit. And it seems like you've been masterful at getting that in what I thought was a really tough start. And then I thought it ended on a real high note. I know one of the things Brian said at the end was not only were people just crying because they lost a game, but that this was the last time they were going to be together. But there were friendships formed in that room over this year and this team that feel like they're going to last forever. And I think that's a real credit to you, John.
Well, I think it's You know, if you're not in it, the number one reason I do this is relationships. I like to think I can win championships on the way, but I do it so my players will be great human beings. I do it for the intrinsic value. I like coming and working with my staff and my players. Intrinsically, I would do this no matter what. I don't do it, and that's something that it's that natural feeling of wanting people around me to do better than what they think they are capable of doing.
Well, I hope Walt Harrison isn't listening, because I know there's a lot of pressure on salaries this year, and you just basically said you do it for free, I think. So.
No, I didn't say free.
No, I just heard that you were just doing it. For the relationships, you said. For the relationships and the chance to make those relationships. Anyway, it's been wonderful talking with you, and I would look forward to sitting down and talking with you down the road a piece. That would be a fun thing to do, John, and thank you so much. Do you have any thoughts about what's happening tonight with the University of Connecticut's team?
They're going to win.
They're going to win
this game. Don't worry. Don't even worry about it. If you had dinner planned, go to dinner. They're winning by, I think they'll win by 10.
Really? That good? I saw that Arizona team. They look pretty good to me, but I love the UConn kids. I think they're doing great. I am a believer that we've got the best woman player and men's player in basketball in the University of Connecticut this year. So it's a fun time.
I've been saying Kemba Walker for, I did radio interviews and they asked me about Jimmer Fredette. I said Kemba Walker is the best player in America.
Yeah. Well, he's sure lighting it up these days. And it's fun seeing the freshmen, the kids playing so well. Jeremy Lamb especially. What a few games he's had.
I think all of them have really stepped up. And I'm real excited about tonight, so.
Yeah, me
too. Let's go Huskies.
Okay. Well, listen, great talking to you. Brian, thanks so much for organizing this, and look forward to seeing you in class, and we'll all get together when your paper's done.
Great.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Okay, take care now. Bye-bye.